You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSE has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. As always on a Thursday, I've got the double-headed Dream Team edition, which is populated by, in order of, just in order, it's Viv Govender from Rand Swiss and also David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities, both in Johannesburg. Now, I've got international and I've got local. Who wants to take the local news? David, is that you? I think it probably is.
Yeah, I've kind of looked at it.
Well, let me just give you my list. You've got the South African Reserve Bank cutting rates by 25 basis points. Right. I don't think that needs to detain us because we're expecting it. But I've got a retail story here. You've got Spar, Lewis and Mr. Price, all retailers but in different fields and all coming up with different sets of results because Spar up 4%, Lewis is down 4% and a bit, and Mr. Price up 7.75%. I don't know if you looked at any of those, but certainly there's a, if you're a retail analyst, you don't just blanket buy now, you cherry pick.
That 8% or 7% that's come from... that came from Mr. Price, a little surprising because I think when I looked at their revenue numbers, because I always compare it with what we thought would be with our estimations, and it was down on that. When you read through it, there was nothing exciting about it. They did mention that, the consumer's under pressure. So I'm quite surprised at the rate. What might have prompted all of this is that, yes, a 25-point basis cut, by the Reserve Bank governor, that inflation's coming down. We saw some good retail numbers. So there's been supportive economic data. But to be honest, Lindsay, I think a lot of these retail stocks have run well ahead of, in other words, the prices have run well ahead of the underlying earnings. There's nothing dramatic about what's happening in our retail sector. So I think Lewis was surprising because I think that we did have a warning before. I thought it was a rather good result, but their numbers come from rather insurance rather than actually selling couches and chairs and dining room tables and so on. I think they load that with all kinds of add-ons, which is so typical of installment sales and that. I haven't had a good look at the Spa, but I think overall sentiment at the lower end of the market, I'm not talking about the top end, which is all our international stocks. There's been quite a bit of interest, but whether it's sustainable or not, I'm still very skeptical that our economy it's improving, but I don't think it's strong enough to sustain these issues. And just a last word, just look at what Lesetra said, what the governor said about growth. 1.1% this year, 1.7% next year, 1.82%. So over the next 4 years, we're not even, we're unlikely to grow above 3%. Very difficult to keep up, selling goods with an economy that is just faltering, that's going nowhere.
Okay. Viva, I do want to stick with local and come to you on this one, because yesterday when 91's results came out, a giant asset management company, everyone, Viv, was completely flummoxed, not flummoxed, but surprised by the fact that they came out with this Sanlam deal. And I was speaking to another commentator yesterday after the results came out, and he said it must be the best kept secret in South African corporate history, because normally these sort of things leak out, Viv. But it's very interesting that this consolidation in such a creative way has come out. And what it essentially says is that 91 has got $17 billion worth of money to manage. And I wonder why it went ahead. Is it because their assets under management are not growing organically? What do you think, Viv?
Yeah, look, obviously, I'm surprised that, this will pass competition, because this consolidation is pretty substantial in the industry, you know what I mean?
Yes.
So, number one, I'd be like, it's a surprise if it goes through, because remember, Vodacom had that 12 billion rand deal blocked for that infrastructure. And, this is, like you said, the deal we're talking about, 400 to 800 billion of assets, that's going to be like involved in this thing. This is obviously a very difficult thing. But that being said, like David says, we have an industry at the moment or an economy that's growing just barely. You know, these things feed are basically, you know, feeders off the economy. You need to have people saving money, people earning enough to save, you know, to feed into the system, to actually make people, you know, make more money, etc. And I do think that in terms of, you know, the kind of situation, it kind of does make sense from that point of view. I mean, we are looking at, you know, asset manager, you're talking about distribution combining, you know, the synergies obviously are there to make sense. And especially, like I said, with an economy that's as weak as it is right now. But like I said, I'm surprised if it passes, like, you know, the regulators.
You know, Viv, you're onto a very important point there. When you look, just let me go back a bit. Let me go backtracking to the 90s or something. In those days and before that, the 80s, if you never got any business from the four, from Old Mutual, Sanlam, Liberty Life, Allan Gray, you were dead. You could not conduct your business. That's how powerful they were. I call them the Champions League. In the Euro League, and I think Lindsay will appear it, in the Europa League, you know, with the pension funds, the Eskom Pension Fund, PIC, mine officials pension fund, Anglo-American pension fund, things like that. They were minor asset managers. But these, you know, board of execs, Seifert's and so on, but those control the investments of the country. And they did a lot for PIC. They did a lot for that. You know, they were also third-party asset managers. To see Sanlam now give it all up just shows you shows you what's happened to the industry. Hmm. They're obviously not making any money out of it. They obviously have huge costs with very little return and said, hold on a sec, we don't need this. Give it to 91. Let them manage it. You know, we'll go out and sell the products, the underwriting products. You know, we'll sell insurance, we'll sell whatever it is, pass the money on to 91 and they'll invest it without us needing to have a mining analyst, you know, of which there's no need. So for me, it's hold on. This is really a dramatic turn and identifies just how far down, you know, our asset managers have fallen, how difficult it is. You know, this is a warning shot, and it's going to, you know, just shows you things are not that easy in the industry.
So consolidation in the industry, yeah. And I would say that the more nimble of the two parties is 91 and Hendrik du Toit at the helm saying, look, okay, I can see the writing on the wall, as you've just described well, David, and let's consolidate now before other people consolidate with each other. And maybe, I don't know, maybe David staying with you, it'll promote a rash of other consolidations as the South African economy continues to disappoint.
If you talk to Viv, he don't talk South African market.
Mm.
he deals overseas. He's got clients who give him money. He goes overseas. He's got his own little business, very similar to mine. That's all I do. I've got clients. They like me or they trust me. Whatever it is, I go offshore. I do not even try compete in the local market, because to be honest, there's nothing for me to do. You know, there's nothing that excites me. Yes, we're talking about Mr. Price. We're talking about those, you know, you can't do big money around a handful of retailers or so. What's exciting about a retailer?
Just wait a second. You do get excited about American retailers. We had Target yesterday, share price falling 20% plus.
Oh, yeah.
And then we had Walmart's numbers, which were really good. So retail can be exciting, but you're saying South African retailer is not exciting.
In a no growth area, you know, in a low growth area. That's why I mentioned the 1.1, 1.7, 1.8, 2% over the next 4 years. And how can Sanlam grow its asset management side? How can 91 grow its side against that? You know, it can only do that by consolidating or stealing other people's business. You know, there's one pie and you go and steal someone else's business.
Well, steals a strong word, David. We know that financial services professionals would never steal from a client. Viv, the one that we really want to talk about, of course, after the bell last night, NVIDIA's results came out. I looked at these things. I mean, just the headlines. Revenue doubled. revenue doubled. How many companies in the world, unless they're coming off a very low base, we made $100 last year, we've made $200 this year. How many people, Viv, can say, as a CEO, a chairman, whatever, and sit down in front of shareholders and say, we doubled our revenue. We're looking forward to, in 2025, being a $4 trillion market cap company. Astonishing numbers, Mr. Govender.
Yes. Look, firstly, I want to say that it's amazing. Like, you know, Steve Jobs is the byword, or Elon Musk is the byword for entrepreneur, you know, in this current environment. They are nothing compared to Jensen Huang. Honestly, if you look at the value Steve Jobs created while he was alive, okay, you know, a lot of the creation of Apple happened after he had passed away. And like, you know, because Tim Cook took over. Elon Musk, you know, his companies, of course, I think Tesla just passed $1 trillion or so. But you combine all of them together, you know, you're talking under $2 trillion. And now you have this $3.6 trillion company created by Jensen Huang. He is the, by measure of actual creation of market capitalization and value, the number one entrepreneur of the last, I would think, probably century. You'd have to go back to the people like, you know, the Carnegies or the, you know, the Fords or the, you know, the Rockefellers to find somebody that created something this valuable, you know. The former busboy, as he likes to say, even though that was only when he was like a teenager. But yeah, this is an incredible company. Like you said, you're talking about a revenue of $35 billion, okay? Mm-hmm. Looking to increase that for the next quarter to $37.5 billion, okay? And that's even ahead of Wall Street estimates. The only problem is because the market's been so used to expecting such brilliant results from this company that even with such incredible, you know, returns, we are seeing the share price down slightly today. Not dramatically, 2.5% or so. When the news, you know, first broke about the results, there was a dip after market of about 5%. It ended down about, say, 2-3%. But if you look at the variation in the share price, I mean, even with the current fall we have at the moment, for the month as a whole, or the last month, it's only down 1%, you know. Yeah. And for the year to date, this thing is up 195%. You know, that means it's created about $2 trillion of market capitalization this year alone. And remember, 2019 was the first time we had a normal company, not a Saudi Aramco, but a normal company, which is Apple, passed the $1 trillion mark. And this company has created $2 trillion of market capitalization in the last year.
It's quite astonishing, the numbers that you've just trotted out there, Viv. David, you're a shareholder in NVIDIA on behalf of, I don't know whether it's yourself, but certainly your clients. You must have been delighted with these things.
You know, these numbers, I don't think this is over. You know, when you actually analyze what the analysts said, and it comes back to exactly your introduction, I mean, this is a phenomenal business. You can't, you know, I always use the example, you know, even a logistic company, sometimes the truck goes out and bursts a tire. You know, it's going to happen. Businesses are not going to go that smoothly. There are going to be certain setbacks. I'm not quite sure what the setback is with NVIDIA. It just seems to be going along. There might be certain delays in getting the, you know, this new chip ready. There might be logistical problems. There might be whatever. Matter of fact, it's crazy. The fact that they might have missed their margins, Lindsay, are over 70%. Hello. Go ask Pick and Pay what their margins are, or go ask
4% maybe. I don't know.
I know the others are, but not Pick and Pay. But whatever, this is 70%, and I mean, so you know, the analysts are, oh no, you know, when margin's going to get back to whatever it is. So they obsessed with models. You know, we sit back at sheets and we try and work out these models and get back and kind of discount to the fourth decimal point, what we think a company should be worth. You know, you're missing the story, man.
Let me ask you this. I'm going to ask both of you this question. Is the only way that the 70% margin that David has just referred to and the market dominance that we've been speaking about for months, the three of us, is the only way that this can rectify itself, or rather become more equitable, is another company coming up with a chip and growing like NVIDIA did 2-3 years ago? And Viv, I'll go to you on this. Is this the only way margins are going to fall and revenues are going to stop doubling every year? Or is there some other reason, i.e. AI doesn't become the popular theme of the future?
Well, I mean, the thing with AI is, and this is going to go a little bit more in depth than like most things. So there's a thing called scaling. And the scaling thing has been, up till this point, what you do is you add data, you add your computing power, and you get a smarter machine out. However this is done, who knows exactly what the mechanism behind it is. It's literally like magic. People don't know exactly how it works. They have theories, but they don't know exactly how this thing creates what it creates. And the thing is that, you know, we have hit a point in the last, I would think, year or so, where it's emerged that it might be that either the data, probably the data, is not at a high enough level. Because remember, we're feeding human knowledge into this thing. And if you feed human knowledge into this thing, and there's a feeding of human knowledge, it's not creating new knowledge, it kind of tops off at the brain power of a human, you know what I mean? And that's pretty much where it is right now. It's topping off at the brain power of a human. It can do the things that a normal human being does. Some people put IQ tests for this thing and say it comes with 101 or 100 IQ, which is the average human IQ. Some say it's coming to the same level as a good graduate student or a good, you know, university student, which is kind of what you'd expect from the rich information there is in the world. So that's the kind of capping. It's not going beyond that at the moment. The question is the new set of stuff coming out? Is the stuff that, you know, OpenAI is about to release in the next few months, or Grok is about to release in the next few months, is that stuff going to be the next level? And that's why people are like, for instance, there was a tweet this week by Sam Altman saying there is no wall. And the term wall implies that there's a limit to how far this particular technology gets us. Now, we will know it, like the next, say, I would say by the first quarter of next year, we will know if these machines can go beyond what they are currently. If they can't, what will happen is that the machines that, or the programs we have, will stay at the same intelligence, but they'll get smaller. And that's been happening. So we've seen smaller and smaller programs achieve the same level of performance, making them more efficient and so on, which is probably not a good thing for NVIDIA in the short term, but probably a great thing for them in the long term, because it means that AI becomes ubiquitous and you put it everywhere because it's so small and so cheap, you know. But in terms of like the profit margin, it also means that, you know, it's more possible to compete, because without the driver of having to build these multi-hundred-billion or, you know, hundred-billion or billion-dollar data centers, you basically then can focus more on costs, and you're not as focused on basically just trying to be first. Because right now, the idea they have is that you are in a race, an exponential race, and being 6 months behind means you're two times or maybe half as powerful as somebody else, you know? Yeah. And therefore, you want to be as the first one there, no matter what the cost, gives you a huge advantage. And I do think that, like I said, next, say, 3-4 months, we will know for certain, is it a case of the walls were hit or not? And that, I think, is the real danger. Competitors, I don't know who the competitors are. AMD is not a competitor. Intel is falling apart. You know, ARM has its own problems. So I don't know. I mean, there is a company called Grok. This is the other Grok, not the Elon Musk Grok.
Okay.
It's another Grok doing inference, but they're not trying to go against NVIDIA in terms of the training data. So the training system, sorry. So until we hit that wall, I don't think NVIDIA has a real issue with competitors coming taking their money away. Unless there's something happening in China we don't know about. And that could be possible.
Yeah, it could easily be. They'll unleash it on an unsuspecting world. Okay, but both of you are still holding on. I'm being presumptuous here.
Oh, yes.
I'm putting words in your mouth, but you're both holding on to your holdings in NVIDIA, which have served you so well.
You know, there's certain businesses like NVIDIA. Take NVIDIA out the equation now. I understand what Viv's saying, and we'll find that out in a few, you know, 6 months' time. But for the meantime, there is no competition. You know, it's the same thing as ASML. There's certain monopolies. There's certain businesses that are pivotal to the existence of this technology. And, you know, when you look at the pure numbers that this company has, you know, earns, I mean, it's phenomenal. And to kind of nitpick over issues, and I think every kind of analyst tries to outsmart the next one, you know, because that's the only way you kind of attract any kind of attention. I just say, just leave it, you know. You've got to just get past the noise. I saw that NVIDIA was down about 2.5% after close. It's picked up. It was up at 1%. It's down a little bit now. Yeah. But I think there are other issues that are just dominating the U.S. market at the moment. I think that has more to do with the Middle East and Ukraine and Russia and issues like that.
We'll talk about that as we close the show, actually, because I got rather disturbed when Mr. Putin rolled out these mobile nuclear bomb shelters, which is just something to scare the West, I'm sure. But the fact that he's doing it is a bit of saber-rattling. But anyway, let's get back to more mundane and less unpleasant matters by looking at the dollar rand, which is 1802. So a nice rally for the for the rand and fall for the dollar to the tune of 0.2%. British pound against the rand is 22.77 and the euro rand is 18.98. The euro dollar is 105.35, which is a euro which is slightly weaker. Gold price 26.67, which is up $18 per ounce. The platinum price is still below 1,966, even though it's up $5 on the day. And the palladium price is 10.39, which is up 15. You know, in the old days, that used to be meaningful stuff that I would be talking about now, but nobody cares anymore. I can hear you two yawning in the background. Brent crude oil is $73.90, which is up 1.5%. West Texas crude is up 1.5% as well, $69.78. Copper's fallen 0.5%. What else have we got here? Steel price is up 3.5%. S&P 500 futures are 5,930. Oh, God, it's flashing all over the place, my screen. 5,926. The high, all-time high, achieved about a month ago was 6,053. So it's off, and it's off today by 0.2%. But nonetheless, getting itself ready. I think warmongering isn't helping the matter. The South African 10-year bond yield, after the South African Reserve Bank cut rates by 0.25%, is 9.23%. And the US 10-year bond yield, stubbornly high, just below 9.40%. David, what's...
US
is 4.39%. Did I say nine? Yeah, so Freudian slip. Yeah, maybe one day when Trump gets in after 2 years of a Trump administration, maybe it will be 9.39. 4.39. Thank you for pointing that out, David. And Bitcoin is a bit of a go, isn't it? I mean, goodness me. It's 96,320, up 1.75%, but was higher. It got to 98,344 earlier today. What is that?
I just have a worry that there's going to be a bit of a shock in that. And I just think that trying to push through regulations, you know, and just, I don't know what Trump and Mr. Musk's policy, you know, what their aim is or their agenda. And I don't know what they want to make, you know, of Bitcoin, but I think that somewhere along the line, once you try and put this into regulation, you know, into a regulatory environment where it enables you to monitor what's happening, I think it's going to be a lot more difficult than the kind of moves that we're seeing now. In fact, I think all Trump's policies are not just going to glide through as easily as the market.
And his relationships as well. And I can predict one thing for 2025.
Yeah.
Maybe he'll hang on till then. But I believe that there's going to be a bust-up between Trump and Musk because of these two giant egos. And one day Trump's going to wake up and say, this chap's more important than I am. You're fired. That's what will happen.
They're calling him Melania, the first lady.
Melania, yes, exactly. Yes, and that's not bad. Yeah.
I have a different thing. Let me tell you why, right? Is that the other people that have got into Trump's orbit and they want to do something are doing it because they have like a policy. They want to fight a war. They want to have a policy out here. I'm of the impression that both Vivek and Musk are more self-serving.
Yeah.
And they are not going to cut spending. If they do, it's going to be small. They can't cut spending that much. What they are going to do in their respective things, like Vivek, like remember I told you guys, has that company Roivant, which is a direct, depends on the way the FDA functions. So he's going to know exactly how to mess that or to move the FDA to make his company more valuable. Right. And Musk already, I think, has gotten approval for 5 times more launches on his Starship. Mm. 5 times, not it was five more, 5 times more next year than he had before. And I think that Starship, the last valuation was over $200 billion on SpaceX. That's going to go through. The Tesla one, I don't think it's going to be as easy, but probably going to do something with driverless vehicles or whatever. But the SpaceX one is probably going to go significantly higher that it is right now because of Trump in there. And I don't think that, the reason that you had fallouts with Bolton and you had fallouts with like Tillerson and so on was because those guys have actual like philosophies. Like Bolton wants the world look in a certain way. And, you know, because Mali is, and all these other guys, and Kelly and stuff, want the world to look in a certain way. They weren't just there to make themselves, you know, rich or get money. as much as you like that. And I think if you're just in there to make money, and you don't mess with Trump, you just give him what he wants, whatever he wants, you know, say whatever he wants. Feel like RFK, eat at McDonald's if he says so. And I just work it out. Yeah. But I do think there's a couple things. Firstly, it's not Trump that's going to be moving these things. It's going to be these people that have specific industry requirements. It's like putting lobbyists in charge of something. And they're going to do things, you know, here that are going to be very, very, paradigm shifting in terms of the way the U.S. government works, just because of, they know what it is, because this is what their companies do. These are professionals in the industry that are coming in and saying exactly how they should be regulated. If I was to take any of us, like imagine me and David had to go and be in charge of the FSCA, we know what we would do. You know what I mean? It's not some politician getting involved here. Me and David at the FSCA, and suddenly, you know, we'd be billionaires, right? If we had no morals.
Well, no. There's a thought.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't forget I introduced you to my little cat. okay, yeah. Well said, Viv. On the JSE today, Mr. Price, the top performer up 8.3%. Spar was up 3.75%. Truworths up 3.6%, hanging onto the coattails of other retailers. And TFG, the same thing, just over 3% higher on the downside. Ah, look at this. Sibania down 2.75%. Anglo Platinum down another 2.5%. DRD Gold down 2.2%. And BHP Group down 2.1%. If you're missing the theme there, they all dig commodities out of the ground. And with the combination of stagnant commodity prices and a stronger rand, that is what's happened. David, give us the closing JSE indices and the value traded, please.
Yeah, they all share close. 0.29%, 85523. Resources, as you mentioned, were down. The resource index down 1.1%. The rest of the market up, you know, just driven by those consumer stocks. The consumer discretionary index up nearly 1.8%. Overall, the industrial 25 up 0.4%. Banks up 1.23%. So, you know, financials and industrials did well. And it's strange enough, property shares also creeping up as rates come down and a better feeling about it. Just on the value side, interesting to say we were over 22 million. I'll give you the billion. I'm going to give you the exact number here. Probably about 24, 25 billion. But what's interesting, and I'm not quite sure, there was a trade that went through in Anglo Gold, 5.3 billion. Which made up 23% of the market today. So
some corporate activity there, obviously.
There's obviously a big line that's gone through. I'm trying to work out what time it went through, but I'll get that in a second, whether it was right at the end or not. No, it seems to be steady throughout the day. I don't think it was in a closing auction.
Okay, well, watch out for that one. Consolidation in the financial services industry, maybe in the gold industry as well. We shall see. Gentlemen, on the final note is something that is about an hour and a half away from me on the train in a place called Den Haag or The Hague. And it's the International Criminal Court. Now, they have arrest warrants out for some Sudanese leader, stroke terrorist. I think his name is Bashir or Bashar or something. Anyway, I don't know. That's rude of me. But anyway, there's that. There's an arrest warrant out for Putin. And today, David,
Netanyahu.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want to be Netanyahu's travel agent because he's not going to be getting any business in the near future. And also and the defense minister as well. Yeah. And also, posthumously, I think, because he's dead now, is the Hamas leader was also slapped with an arrest warrant, which seems to be a bit meaningless to me. But, but more seriously, these are very serious charges, and they do mean something, even though he'll never, ever be arrested. David, what do you think?
There's nothing I can say about it. I mean, the fact that the International Court have done what they've done, you know, whether they're ever promulgated or whether these people are ever arrested. But, you know what's happened? I mean, of course, there are going to be defense mechanisms, et cetera. But I think from when I see the G20 get together and everybody's kissing, you know, and they're all shaking hands. In the meantime, they hate each other. They're all, they're, you know, it's the most dysfunctional kind of G20, or certainly the United Nations is dysfunctional. And I've got, listen, Netanyahu's not my favorite person. I don't know whether he's a criminal of that nature, and I don't know where it's going to go. But I think obviously there's going to be an outcry. When Trump comes in, all it's going to do is you know, the people who brought these charges, mainly South Africa, it's not going to endear South Africa to Mr. Trump. You know, and you can see it by the appointments he's making. So he is, Mr. Ramaphosa is now, you know, for the next year, I think he's the leader of the G20, or what, when I say leader, yeah, he's the chairman, whatever it is, but I don't think it endears ourselves to the Americas now. I thought they would be making other kind of overtures. This is from a long time ago, but
yeah,
who knows? But all my whole point is that, you know, what we're not doing, and what South Africa is not doing, is making any attempt to improve relationships with the United States. We think we're cute. I'm not sure we are.
No. Viv, your final word from you on this one. I think one of the points that the ICC makes is that Israel, under the leadership of Netanyahu, is using famine as a weapon of war. In other words, starving the people in Gaza. Now, it sounds very emotive, etc., but when you see 109 trucks being looted, and they'll say, well, we had nothing to do with that. The 109 trucks were looted by criminals who are going to sell the food on. But surely there should have been a military escort or whatever it is. And I don't want to get too political, but Viv, the final word on this matter from you.
I don't think it'll be Netanyahu that suffers. The season is mid-70s. So by the time, you know, politics changes enough in the U.S. for this to be a bother to him, he'll be in his 90s. You know, we're talking about probably a decade or two from now. And it's unlikely they're going to arrest him and, like, you know, put him on trial, though it has happened in the past, you know, to people that, you know, like former Nazi guards, etc., who've been arrested in the 90s. I think it's more of a problem for the commanders in the 40s and the 30s and stuff in the IDF at the moment. Yeah. Because what's going to happen is that, look, I mean, here's a guaranteed future forecast that 2030 is from now. The Muslim population in the U.S. will be larger. You already see them making a difference in places like Michigan and so on in the U.S. It's going to impact how the U.S. treats, you know, these kind of things going forward. And in, like, say, 20, 30 years' time, it's going to be a large enough block that you can't ignore it. It's already large enough in Europe that you can't really make an anti, you know, Muslim kind of statement, you know, without some kind of big backlash. And so I think that Israel's kind of backing the ICC from the U.S., which is the only backing it has of real power, will in, say, two or three decades be gone. And so if you're like Netanyahu, you're dead. If you are 30, 40 years old at the moment, you are in your 60s and 70s, and then suddenly someone's going to come to you and arrest you for a war crime you committed, you know, a lifetime ago. And I think that is the danger of this going forward. It's not going to be Netanyahu, but it will be people that are currently, like I said, in their 30s and 40s that are going to be, I would be amazed if at least a few of them don't go to prison for this, say, in a couple of decades' time, or have some kind of trial around it. The demographics just work in that way. Politically, it'll be possible for you to be pro towards Israel, anti Palestine as a U.S. politician and win a national election, I think, in the next, say, 20, 30 years.
Troubled geopolitical times, and we didn't even mention the Putin nuclear story, but that'll come. Oh. That'll unfold over the next week before we next speak. That was Viv Govender from RAND Swiss, David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities, both in Johannesburg, and that was the always excellent Thursday night edition of Viv and Dave, the 5 o'clock shadow. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.